Hello, Jordan.
What's going on, Michael?
Weekly pods.
That's what we do.
It's literally all we do most of the time.
You getting some hair off the microphone?
Yeah, it had a, I don't know what it was, fuzz kind of.
They can't see it because we don't have those vid pods yet. But could be soon.
Never say never. Jordan.
Ever.
Your child is coming soon.
Could be. Could not be, though. You know, the longest ever pregnancy was over a year. So,
one in a million?
So you're saying there's a chance.
What's going through your mind? What kind of thoughts and emotions are you experiencing here on the potential near eve of your firstborn child?
Here's the deal, Michael. I'll just give you the rundown. So the due date was August 16th, which I've now learned through this experience that the due date is really more of a meaningless date that means absolutely nothing. And it's just like, oh yeah, this is the projected date that could be long before or long after, but either way, whatever. So I'm like, why the fuck do we have a date then? Why don't you just give me a range? So it was August 16th. And it is now August 25th, and tomorrow is the induction date, which means they're going to induce labor, which is pretty crazy, because I think that it's got to be a relatively new thing in terms of the timeline of the world, of human history. Mm-hmm. Just didn't happen, right? It was like, in terms of human history, it was like, well, you're just going to fucking wait until this baby comes out. So they will induce labor. They will give her medicine to get labor started, because apparently if it goes too long, after a while, the placenta will stop nourishing the child as much, I believe. And like, it can get to be, it can just be like, become more and more dangerous if the child does not come out, before 42 weeks or so. So she's 41 weeks and 2 days, and tomorrow's the induction date, so we're going to evict that child very swiftly, hopefully. But I mean, the thing about inductions, essentially what, there are many things that it can mean, but the body isn't fully ready for the child to come yet, so what they try and do is they try and speed that process up. But the issue is, because the body isn't fully ready, that's when it's more likely to have a C-section, or any number of things. So it's like, and oftentimes labor can take a significantly longer period of time, because if the body is like fully ready, that's when you hear about these really quick labor stories. It's like, oh yeah, it started pushing in like 15 minutes. So that was it. That was like, the body was ready. The cervix was ready. Everything was like ready to go. Whereas induction, you might not be anywhere near fully dilated. And like, it could take 24 plus hours sometimes. So hopefully it will not be a laborious labor.
Wow. I didn't know that was the case. Was that
me either?
When you have to induce, that on average the delivery takes longer.
Takes longer, often more painful, and more likely to have like complications like a C-section. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's usually, it doesn't definitively mean but that, but it's more likely to have that happen. If we're talking statistics, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You're a statistics guy, so. So I didn't know this either. I'm learning along the way. But yeah, so we got that tomorrow. And yeah, so either she'll be born tomorrow or Saturday, depending on how long this labor goes. And that's it, man. Yeah, so I got a couple more days before I'm a father. And that's it. Or some people would say I'm already a father, but I don't think I'm already a father yet. I'm like almost a father.
You haven't done a lot of like direct parenting quite yet.
Yeah, no.
And your mom's in town? She got in town this week?
Yesterday. She got in town, got her an Airbnb close by, like a block away. She'll be here for about 4 to 5 weeks. Long time.
I mean, that'll be really nice for her, of course, and for you guys, but also just to have her as an extra set of hands and helper, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Will be
she bought so much stuff for the baby. She bought like unbelievable amounts of baby books and clothes. And like, she's not only is she excited about the baby, but she literally bought so much stuff because it's a girl. And the whole time she was like, I was never able to buy girl stuff. Mm. And so she's just so excited to have like pink things and bows. Girls love bows. Like, my mom and my wife are both very excited to put bows on her,
uh-huh.
which I didn't know was a thing. It's a big thing, apparently, to have a bow on your baby girl, you know, like the on their head.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they like have a little bow. Like, it's like a headband with like a little bow on it.
I would imagine it's one of the things that can differentiate a little baby boy from a little baby girl, because
most boys are not going to have a bow.
Most, yeah. But and just that they look relatively similar in my experience as newborn babies.
Yeah, they all look like aliens.
They just look like babies.
Did you ever see Sebastian Maniscalco's stand-up about like newborn babies?
No, I don't even know who that is.
Sebastian, oh man. All right, we got to watch Sebastian. If anyone doesn't know Sebastian Maniscalco, if for whatever reason Sebastian Maniscalco is listening to this podcast, which can guarantee he's not, one of the most famous comedians in the world right now, super funny Italian guy. He has this whole skit about how when his wife was giving birth to his daughter, and he's like, these are all the things I wish people had told me about, you know, what's going on. And one of them is just like, what is going on with the head? Like, when you have a C-section, the head doesn't do anything, but like their heads are so soft. And he's like, my daughter came out and it was like a cone. He's like, what the fuck is this? Mm-hmm. And he was like, honey, I think she's gonna, she's like, is everything okay? And he's like, ah, she's gonna get made fun of at school. So
yeah, the bones of the skull are just so soft that, and they have to be like that to for the baby to come out. And then within a day or two or some short amount of time, you kind of go back to normal.
Yeah, I don't know the time frame. I know some kids have to wear a helmet, I think, in order to reshape their head, but I'm not sure.
Well, this will be fun keeping everyone updated on the adventures of fatherhood and having a little newborn baby.
Yeah, and you'll be experiencing unclehood.
I know.
Unclehood. You're gonna come here, Mike, in October?
Coming to Texas.
Yeah.
I think so. I think that's the next trip.
What's up with you? You got fantasy football going on? You're prepping for that?
You can't follow a discussion about the birth of your first child literally on the eve of the birth of your first child, and then you transition into Mike's fantasy football. It's just such like a...
Dude, your fantasy football draft, this is a big deal. This is a huge moment of the year.
All right, Jord. That's enough.
Christian McCaffrey, number one seed. A lot of people are overlooking him. They're overlooking him. He's had a couple injuries, unrelated injuries, but you know, bad luck.
For anyone who cares about football, Jordan's regurgitating some of the things I said. Not the number one seed, but I think he's undervalued this year. We'll see. Yeah.
Eric Roberts is listening and laughing because he knows that I know nothing about this.
Yeah. I have a fantasy football league that I do with. I actually have a pretty unique relationship with a bunch of my friends that I grew up with from like elementary school, middle school, high school, guys who I played hockey with, some guys who I didn't, but we're all just in the same friend group and have stayed close over the years. And yeah, there's 14 of us in this annual fantasy football league. It's a 10-year league, and yeah, the draft is in 2 days, so I'm way behind this morning here. I told Jordan I was doing a mock draft, my first mock draft. I haven't really been doing anything, trying to get ready, and you're like, a practice draft? It's like, yeah. Like, just with random people? It's like, yeah, you just sign on to one of the many websites that offer it, and mock draft.
One of my favorite memories of fantasy sports was the first year I was coaching Gary, and he was doing the fantasy baseball draft.
Uh-huh.
And you gave me the talk before. You're like, hey, just so you know, when Gary does this fantasy baseball draft, like, he eats an ungodly amount of chicken wings. And I'll never forget, Gary called me in because he went to his vacation house and the house was filled with like tons of dudes who were doing this fantasy draft and it was a big deal. And Gary called me in and he was like, hey, just want to let you know. And I said, yeah, Mike already told me about the chicken wings. And he looked so happy. He was like, you guys were talking about me. He's like, he filled you in on that. He's like, oh, that's amazing. He was so excited to hear that. And he was like, you know, I eat everything, right? He's like, you know, I eat the bones too. I was like, yeah, I know. Mike told me you eat the bones too.
He does. He just, well, you remember he was on Hot Ones.
Yeah. He ate the bones. Yeah.
And just like going in, gnawing on the bone. Yeah.
He loves telling people that. And he loves like people's facial expressions when they react to him, like eating the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. He also liked any time when there was a significant like transfer of specific information about him.
Yeah.
When you started coaching him. I remember that.
He loved that.
Yeah.
Well, good. So when is your fantasy draft happening?
Saturday.
Oh,
5
wow.
5 p.m. Saturday.
Nice. When does the football season start?
We don't need to just continue to hammer football on the pod here.
But I am interested.
I mean, we certainly can.
Is it preseason yet?
Yeah, they're in preseason. I know that the Vikings' first game is Sunday, September 11th. Sometimes they'll do like a Thursday night game to open the season, maybe. I don't remember, but somewhere in that range.
How are the Vikings looking this year?
Very good.
Do you think there's a chance they go to the Super Bowl?
I do think there's a chance they go to the Super Bowl. I'm also like diehard. The Vikings are the only sports team that I follow, and I've been a fan for basically my entire life. My grandpa used to take me to games when I was like a baby.
Yeah.
Literally 12, 18 months. And I'm super optimistic and not realistic or practical at all. So I'm not really like a great person to ask, but yeah, a lot of really skilled players, new head coach, new coaching staff, new GM. So like a lot of new blood in the organization. And yeah, Vegas has us as either first or second to win the division.
Really?
Over-under's 9.5 wins. And like a lot of people are betting the over on that. So yeah, I think the Vikings are going to make the playoffs this year. And we'll see what happens from there.
How'd they do last year?
Not good. Not good.
Okay. Did they make the playoffs last year?
Underperformed. No, we did not make the playoffs.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Kurt Warner.
Are you just naming a non-Patriot player to
impress me? Yeah, I'm just naming random players that I know. He was on the Rams, wasn't he?
Yeah, the greatest show on turf.
What?
They want the greatest, the 98, 97, I don't remember what year it was, but that really good Rams team with Kurt Warner. Remember the storyline of, you know, he was bagging groceries like a month earlier and then got called into training camp and then ended up leading them to the Super Bowl?
I didn't know
that. I don't know if that was, I mean, there's a movie on it. There's a Hollywood movie that came out in the last few years about Kurt Warner's kind of life/football career. I watched half of it on an airplane once.
That's crazy. I didn't know that. Yeah, for everyone listening, I'll just throw random football rules or players' names out there just to try and impress Mike.
Let's hear another one. Earlier, you're like, oh, yeah, if they make a documentary on Tom Brady the way they did Michael Jordan.
That would actually be super cool, though.
It would be really cool. But then you're like, yeah, how about that play when Drew Bledsoe got smashed and Brady had to come in?
Yeah. Bledsoe had that internal bleeding. I'll never forget that.
Is that what happened? I don't remember.
Yeah, he had real internal bleeding. Mm. He came through. He pulled through. Thank God. But his career was over after that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Brady took over from then on.
He did.
I feel like that sort of would suck for Bledsoe.
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to sustain a career-ending injury. That would definitely suck.
Not only a career-ending injury, it's like even though he recovered, it's like the replacement was super good. Like the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of like a huge blow to your ego, right? Where it's like first string gets taken out, second string comes in. It's like, oh shit, this guy's actually way better.
I don't know. I mean, maybe practically, like if you were just going to miss 2 weeks and then your backup ended up being really good and playing really well and you never got a chance to get back in there, I can see how that'd be frustrating, but you can't like be mad at the guy who backs you up for being good when you're kind of on the tail end of your career.
Yeah. But I also remember Bledsoe was, he was super good, right? Like people are like, yeah, Bledsoe's a great quarterback. So he has like, I'm sure his ego is pretty high. Like, yeah, I'm pretty good. Da, 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 gets a big hit. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait. This guy's way better than you are. Oh, and also greatest of all time. Leads the Patriots to multiple Super Bowl wins. Like, that's just, I would imagine that'd be tough mentally.
I don't, it's just completely outside of your control.
Dude, I get it. I know it's outside of your control, but like things outside your control can still be tough mentally. I mean, you know what I mean?
Bledsoe had to have retired in like the very early 2000s. I can't imagine like 20 years later, the legacy of the guy who came in for you would be pissing you off, or maybe it would. I don't know.
Who knows?
You want to keep hammering football?
Let's get Bledsoe on the pod. Let's get Bledsoe on the podcast. It's always funny. People always tell me like, you should go on Rogan. I'm like, yeah, I'd love that. But like, it's, how do you think this works? Just go on Rogan. Like, yeah, people DM me, you should be on Rogan. Oh, thanks.
I'll sign up.
Let's get Bledsoe on the pod. Get his PR agent over here and start talking to him.
We've been getting a decent amount of those emails to info@fitnessbusinessmentorship.
Which email? What emails?
Like, hi, I represent so and so. He's a great coach and the da da da, and he would be a wonderful fit for your podcast.
So annoying.
He wants to promote his guru this and blah 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 that. It's like, oh yeah, we'd love to have him on.
Yeah, we would like we're hurting for guests so bad that we would love to bring on this random schmo to promote their nonsense fucking product to our audience.
Yeah, exactly. Not to mention, have you listened to one episode? Because it's been like 60 episodes since we had a guest on. We've maybe had three on in the entire life of the podcast.
Yeah. I think they just copy, paste, and blast.
Yeah, that is the strategy.
Terrible strategy. It'd be way better if they actually spent more time listening. Loved this episode where you spoke about this, da-da-da-da-da.
Even those come off as canned.
Yeah, I know.
Like, even those kind of irk me. But yes, that is better than just the copy, paste, blast to everyone. Hey, Mike, in your YouTube video where you discussed protein before bedtime was so awesome. Would you like to promote Listerine? Listerine is a mouthwash.
Yeah.
Should we Q&A? Or you want to keep talking about football?
Dude, I'll talk about literally anything. Anything.
What else do you want to talk about?
Man, there's so many things that we could discuss. You see, Andrew Tate got kicked off all platforms.
All right, fire up the Q&A.
Just couldn't believe it. It's crazy they can do that.
Why can't you believe that? They've been kicking people off of all platforms and payment processors have been dropping people and email list services have been dropping people for extremist views for like 5-6 years now. We used to talk about this with Gary.
Yeah, it's just like when I heard it was... I wasn't overly surprised about like Instagram or YouTube or any of that, but to hear that like his payment processor, I don't know, like whether it's Stripe or whatever, or his Gmail could be shut down so he can't get email anymore. Like that was crazy to me, where it's just like, as soon as you say things that it's, you know, it's funny. It's like, it's not even everybody disagrees, right? It's not like, it's like, because he's blowing up. Many people agree with what he's saying, but it's just a certain group of people don't like it. It's like, we're going to silence him, which that to me is crazy just because that's how bad things start. When as soon as someone is saying something that you don't like and a group of people decide to silence them, even if you disagree with what that person was saying, that's like how every large regime over the course of history that has done negative things, like negative, I mean like mass genocides and killings of millions and millions and millions of people, that's how it started. And there's a super famous quote. It's like, well, first they came for these people. It's like first they came for the communists and I didn't say anything because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for them because I didn't say anything because I wasn't them. And then they came for them and I didn't say anything because I wasn't them. And by the time they came for me, there's no one to speak up because everyone is already gone. It's like, that's why it's so important to defend people's ability to speak their mind, even if and especially if you disagree with what they're saying, because eventually someone's going to disagree with you and they'll try and silence you. Like that's what was crazy to me about that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk this entire episode about that. Like, first, there's the distinction between freedom of speech and how that does or does not apply to these companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Facebook has, if you were the owner of Facebook and you had terms and services and someone was in violation, whether or not he was, like, you have the right to say, oh, you can't use my or my product or my service. You can't be on here.
Well, so
like freedom of speech doesn't protect you from those terms and conditions.
Well, so here's my question about that. And I don't know the actual terms, but I do know from a legal perspective, this is where a lot of the issues arise, where like social media platforms, they have to differentiate between, I believe, what is a publishing platform versus I forget what the other term is. But the reason this is important is because, let's say, for example, someone is on a phone call, right? They say something on a phone, right? And maybe it's, I don't know, that like it's against what the phone company wants them to be talking about. But the phone company isn't held responsible for like someone saying something on the phone. It's not the phone company's fault. It's the person on the phone saying it, right? And the phone company isn't allowed to prevent someone from using that service, right? Just because of what they're saying, right? That's a violation of free speech, right?
I don't know.
If I was saying something on the phone company couldn't be like, well, you're no longer allowed to use our phone service just because of what you're saying, because like of your speech, right? Like if they're using it as a way like to incite violence, sure. Like that's illegal, period. But like just by saying something that phone company might not agree with, the phone company is not allowed legally to do that. Whereas a newspaper, on the other hand, is different because the newspaper, the author or whatever, what they're saying, or a radio host or whatever, if they're saying it on the show, that can reflect poorly on the whole company, right? So then they can say, no, you're fired. We don't want you working here anymore. You can't do this anymore, like that. So it's different between like the publishing platform, newspaper, radio, whatever, versus an independent platform that people are using on someone else's platform. Like someone writes something on Facebook, you can't hold Facebook responsible for that. So the reason this distinction is so important is because on one hand, like for example, Facebook, Instagram.
I'm not following the distinction. Are we comparing the employee of the newspaper to the user of the telephone service?
So a user of Facebook, for example, right? Like a user of Facebook doesn't want to be seen as a publishing platform, right? Because if they are a publishing platform, well, then now they can control people. They can control and say, we don't want you on our platform. But the issue is legally, if they are now a publishing platform, well, then they can be held liable for what people say.
I'm completely uneducated on this subject.
So if Facebook wants it both ways, Facebook, Instagram, all they want it both ways. They want to have control over what people say, but they don't want to be held liable for what people say. And you can't have both legally, right? So they want to be able to say these are the guidelines, these are what you're allowed to say, these are what you're not allowed to say. But they also are trying to say, but we can't be held liable for what you say. It's like, and from a legal perspective, it's contradicting. You can't have both ways. You have to be one or the other. Because if you try and have both, then it's essentially like you're picking and choosing who you want based on what you like and what you don't like. It's very contradicting. And that's, I think, one of the major issues from a legal perspective with what's going on. For example, like deplatforming Trump, right? Like taking him completely off. Meanwhile, they still have like the leaders of Al-Qaeda on there. Mm-hmm. Right. It's like they take Trump mm-hmm. off, but like leaders of Al-Qaeda or Putin or whatever it is, people mm-hmm. who are like, they take this one person off. This is a big issue, right? Because it's the difference between a publishing platform versus an independent platform. So I'm not fully sure of the right terms to use, but to me, it's crazy that they can take someone completely off the face of the earth just because they don't like what they're saying.
Yeah. Well, and in such a coordinated effort too.
Yeah.
Right. Like to all happen in a 24-hour window. It's like mm-hmm. accounts, social media accounts get shut down, payment processor gets shut down, like yeah. It's crazy. I don't know. I can't comment on the legality. I don't understand. I don't think that freedom of speech, like, you know, First Amendment rights apply to these companies. That being said, I have always held the position that the solution to speech you don't like isn't to silence them, but is to engage with them. And is to, like, more better speech is the solution to quote-unquote bad speech, not suppression of those voices, whether those voices are voices you agree with or disagree with. More conversation is the answer, not less conversation, especially because then it just, like, if you suppress it in the mainstream, it pops up in other places, it pops up in 4chan, 8chan, like, these communities that are, like, underbellies of the internet grow as a result of a lot of the speech being suppressed. I don't know what the right answer is. I love you, and find it somewhat hilarious that you took the pod in this direction, but
you're like, what do you want to talk about? I was like, we can talk about anything. You're like,
well, Andrew Tate, the top G.
He's a big name right now. He's all over the place. Well, not anymore. Now he's nowhere.
Nowhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
we could do a 4-hour deep dive on that for a pod one day if we want to do that. Maybe not just like a impulsive, did you hear about episode though?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Impulsive.
Impulsive?
Impulsive.
Remember like the
Logan,
podcast?
Logan called him out. Logan called Andrew Tate out. He wanted to fight him, I think.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't think it would be close.
In terms of Andrew Tate would beat him because, you know, he's a professional fighter. Yeah, yeah. Should we do a Q&A?
Yeah. Okay. How to become a personal trainer.
All right. Most of the questions are about the baby.
We can field some of those.
I'll read you in order. Every morning I wake up to see if you've had the baby. The suspense. Where is the baby? Baby? Where's the freaking baby? Will you catch the baby while being delivered? We know you've been practicing. Show us your diapering skills. Where the fuck is the baby? Do you have an unpopular parenting opinion?
Ooh, okay.
You want to go with that one?
Yeah.
These are literally all the questions like at the very top of my Q&A right
now. I believe you. People are interested. People are hooked.
I have an unpopular parenting opinion.
Let's hear it.
My unpopular parenting opinion is that, like, a lot of people have been asking me, am I still going to swear in front of the child? And I'm not going to go out of my way to cuss in front of her, but I'm not going to stop swearing or I'm not going to stop being myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like she's not going to hear swears out in the world, but I think there's a difference between me swearing and her thinking it's okay for her to swear at will, right? It's like, just because I swear doesn't mean she's going to be able to swear. Like, she'll know that she's not allowed to use certain words, especially as a young girl, right? Like this a young kid, like that's, you're not allowed to use those words in front of mommy or daddy. All right. Like, you cannot do that. Can't use them at school, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So like, I think a lot of parents like, oh no, I'm not going to swear in front of my kid. It's like, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, they're going to learn it one day, and it doesn't, like, there's so many other more important things to worry about than swearing. There are like way more important things to be spending your time and energy on. I mean, my mom would swear, but I knew if I did when I was a kid, I was going to get spanked. Like, I knew I would be in trouble. So I didn't do it until I got older. And then now I have my own. And I think a lot of it is because of like where I lived and where I grew up, like everyone swore, but like all of us knew if we did it, we would be in big trouble. So unpopular parenting opinion is probably like, I really don't care about swearing
in front of your kid. Yeah, good one.
Another one was, someone asked me the other day, they said, do you regret not buying a house now that you're having a child? And I'm like, couldn't be more happy that I don't have a house right now. It's like, number one, the baby's going to be like 6 pounds. Like, she doesn't need a whole house. like for the first year, like, it's not like she's going to be running around the house. Like, she doesn't know anything. So it's actually probably
Texas,
nice.
Texas has more space than New York City too.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I mean, eventually we'll get a house with a yard when it's worthwhile and worth the money and everything. But no, I'm actually super happy that I don't have to worry about dealing with a house and a child. Like, if I have an issue, I can just call maintenance and they'll fix it.
Yeah.
Do you have an unpopular parenting opinion?
I don't have any parenting opinions. I'm not in the headspace that you're in. I haven't been thinking about this. I was trying to come up with one while you were talking. And all that came to mind were like not very funny joke questions I was going to ask you about what age you'd put your child on anabolic steroids to like make them an elite child athlete.
Okay.
No, I don't think I have any.
All right. You're going to laugh when I keep reading these questions. How long past the due date are they willing to let her go before they induce labor? How long over Nini's due date are they going to let her go? Any plans to induce? My kids were both early. I can't imagine how you guys feel. Do you have an induction date? What did you all pack in your hospital bag? I just gave my notice after 16 years with this company, only a 1 week notice. Am I terrible?
We don't have a lot of details. I mean, last I checked, standard notice was 2 weeks, but
yeah.
No, I don't think you're terrible for, look, if you were an employee with a company for 16 years, that company benefited tremendously from your employment, right? What people don't realize, or I guess many people just don't think about, is that the only reason why you work for a company is because you make the company money. If you didn't make money for the company, you wouldn't be working there. So no, I don't think you're doing anything wrong. And I don't think people should feel guilty about like stopping working for any reason at any time. And there is a lot like people close to you in your life, friends, family members, like those are the people that really care about you. Your employer will fire you in a second if they have to for what's best for the company. Like the era of 50-year careers and gold watches at retirement and like working for the same company and this strong loyalty, like that's gone. That doesn't exist anymore. I'm told that it did exist. I never saw it, but no, you shouldn't feel guilty at all.
I'm going to take potentially a slightly different route with that. So I agree. I guess it depends on the company. I'll give you an example. Like, let's say, like, my assistant, Kat.
We're talking corporations.
Got it. Okay.
Companies. Okay. Yeah, minimum 50 employees. Like,
where
the overwhelming majority of people on a population basis work.
I was just thinking, if Kat was like, hey, I'm leaving in a week, I would be fucked.
No, you...
right? Or I'd be like, I need you to train someone. I need to find one. Like that would be, yeah, that would, I think like a small business might be different than a big corporation.
Completely different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to mention you treat her and you treat the people you work with differently than the average corporation does.
Yeah.
She's not just a number. That's a real relationship.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
Most people in their jobs are just a number.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good point. This question really pisses me off. It's not even a question, but this person wrote to me. She said, I'm not asking, but please be patient with your wife when the baby arrives. I want to punch this person in the jugular. It's like...
Who said it?
I'm not going to call out their Instagram, but I'm pretty sure she's a personal trainer, so she might be listening to the podcast. Just why would you... Like, what do you think? I'm going to be actively impatient with my wife and... when the baby arrives, like what are you, what is that?
Dude, the internet is a weird, weird place. I commend you for how much you share on there and how actively you participate there with so many hundreds of thousands of like strangers and like, who knows, maybe she had a really bad experience and had something emotional happen. And the first thing that came to mind was to give you that piece of advice.
Yeah, thanks for a terrible piece of advice. What is dumb thing to say? It's like, I don't know. What do you think I'm going to do? Of course I'm going to be patient. I'm going to go out of my way to make her as comfortable as possible and to like help in any way I possibly can. Someone I've never spoken to in my entire life is telling me, hey, be patient with your wife. Like, okay.
Reading that shut pisses the fuck you up. Off, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an annoying thing to say to someone you don't know. I couldn't imagine writing to someone on the internet being like, hey, please be patient with your spouse, but like that I don't know either of you.
How many times a day do you read a comment that creates that reaction?
Not many, to be honest. Not many anymore.
I think you just have a short memory. Like, I think you just like forget quick. Like, you're just like, oh, whatever. Like,
I'm like the guy with the 7-second memory.
Well, no. In a good way. I think you just like shrug off bad stuff and then forget about it and focus on the good. I think you do a good job of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I used to not be good with that, but I think I've gotten better with it. I think I had like an adaptation process where I had to learn how to do that because I would have blown my brains out if I let every comment elicit that type of a response. Let's see. Oh, should I talk about, you know what I've been doing? Like, I've been really pushing my email list lately.
On social?
Yeah.
People to sign up?
Yeah.
What's your strategy been?
So here's something that's actually been working really well. I've been getting thousands and thousands of new subscribers, and I get it because I have a bigger audience, but like it's much more than normal when I just do a regular push, and I think this is the reason why. So what I decided was, I said at the end of last week, I said, for every day the baby isn't here, I'm going to send a free workout via text and email. So sign up to my text list and email list. I got thousands of people signing up for my text and email list. Now, I've said this before. I was like, you can sign up for my email list for free workouts, sign up to my text list for free workouts. And like there were a couple hundred people who would sign up, but not like thousands and thousands and thousands. And I think the reason why it was different this time is because I said like there's a timeline for the next week. There's like, it wasn't just like sign up and like I'll send them. And it was because I created this form of what's it called? This like there's a clear deadline. There's an end date. There's like for the next week, you'll essentially be able to get a free workout. I think that was like people, it really sparked the scarcity. Like, oh, there's only a few left. I'm going to get in, which like helped a lot. So that's been great. And I mean, I know we've spoken a lot about email stuff before. Do you want to talk about email and why it's important or no, not really?
We can, yeah, just in general terms.
Yeah. Yeah. Or you know what? Do you want me to talk about sort of my strategy? You know what? This is important. So I want to talk about why specifically workouts, because this is an important thing for people to discuss. Like, why am I offering free workouts? Why am I not offering like macros or mindset advice or any of that? There is a number of reasons, but the main reason that I'm offering workouts in my email list is because I want people who want to work out. And I know that the people who sign up and enjoy the inner circle most are people who do the workouts. Like the people who stay in the inner circle the longest are the ones who do the workouts. So I'm going to get people who really enjoy doing my workouts onto my email list. So then when I do a sale, they've already tried my workouts, they've enjoyed them, and then they're more likely to join the inner circle. So if you run a macro coaching program, you do nutrition coaching, then you should try to get people onto your email list for a nutrition specific freebie. Like get them on your email list for something nutrition based. If you do training, get them on for training. If like whatever it is that you do, if you do more like accountability stuff, like get them on for an accountability program. But you get people based on what you want them to buy from you, right? And so offering them something for free around that same topic is super, super important.
I love that. Not only what you have to sell, but the type of person you want to be engaging with.
Yeah.
I would imagine that you derive more joy and have a better time in a Q&A when people are asking a Q&A in the inner circle when people are asking questions about the work, their workouts, about making progress, about certain, you know, specifics of the workout, rather than the type of question that's like, I just can't seem to get myself to work out, like, help. Like that's more of that's whatever, less enjoyable for you right now than answering a question from someone who's doing the workouts.
And that used to be enjoyable for me. It was like figuring out how to motivate people and the psychology of it. But you go through phases. Same thing with like with your own training, right? Like sometimes you're having more fun with strength training. Other times you're having more fun with conditioning. Other times you're having more fun with whatever. Like you, your interests and passions change even within the same subset of topics. So yeah, for right now, it's like just training. Like that's what I'm having the most fun with. So I want people who are really into training. And ideally, I also want people who have equipment, right? So with the workouts I'm sending, they're equipment based. They're not body weight. Why? Because I don't want people to think that the inner circle is the best place to be for body weight workouts. Because if they join thinking that I've only sent them body weight workouts, mm-hmm. and they realize, oh, there's not that many body weight workouts in here, then they're probably not going to stay. So I want to make sure that the people who join, they have dumbbells, they have barbells, they might have a little bit of experience, because now they join, they're more likely to stay for a longer period of time than if I'm giving them something different for free and they sign up. Like, well, I thought it was going to be very similar to what you're sending out for free. It should be congruent. It should be very similar.
Yeah. Sweet. I'm glad that's working well for you. That's great.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah. And you know, all the obvious reasons why it's important to build your email list, because you have control over who sees those emails. Because when you post on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok, like a fraction of your audience on a given average post that doesn't go bonkers, only a fraction of your audience is going to see that post. And it's not in your control necessarily how many of them see it. Whereas via email right now and for the foreseeable future, a much higher percentage of the people subscribed to your list are actually going to open and look at that email. I mean, I would say that in light of our earlier discussion, anyone can shut you down at any minute. So it's not like you're completely, you're hedging, right? Like you're not guaranteeing access to your audience just because you have their email address, but you're spreading, you're diversifying. It'd be like the reason you don't invest all of your money just into Apple stock, but you put it into a bunch of different stocks and ETFs and whatever, real estate, and keep some cash and some bonds, wherever else you're putting your money. A diversification strategy is going to lead to the best outcomes over time. Same thing here with attention, YouTube, website, short form, email. And email is a big component of that. Email is also, right now at least, probably the best place to sell.
Yeah, by far.
And so if you're a very, very good writer and you build a list, you can like really deliver value and entertain via email. And we can name a few people who do that, who are writing daily emails and do a great job. But even if you're not, email is not the best place to necessarily build brand. Doing that in various places on social media is, but then for actually launching and having a sale, email's best.
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's a bunch of other things as well. Like with email, it's the best place to sell, but also it's the best place to make sure that your audience is seeing your content. Like everyone loves to talk about like the algorithm is going down, they're not seeing content anymore. So cool. So if you publish a piece of content and you have an email list and a lot of people haven't seen it organically on a platform, then send them a link to it via email. Mm. It's like, hey, I published this amazing piece of content. I want to make sure you see it. And that's going to drive more traffic to it. So people actually take the time to see the content that you spent time making. So that will also, and then when more people are flooded to seeing it, that will help boost it in the algorithm as well. Another thing that's important to be aware of. So I also have more eyes on me right now just because the baby's on the way. And there are certain things that will happen throughout your life that you'll have more eyes on you. Even if you don't have like a huge audience, there will be things that happen that will have more people looking at your stories, looking at your page, because they're interested in what you're doing. So for example, let's say, Mike and I talk about this in the mentorship all the time, but let's say you're going to do your own documentation of like your own take of the Big Mac challenge, where I ate a Big Mac every day for 30 days. I had a ton of eyes on me at that point, because even though my audience wasn't nearly as big, I had relatively a significant number of people watching me every day for those 30 days because they wanted to see me eat the Big Mac. They wanted to see what was going on. When you have these intermittent moments in which you have more eyes on you, use that as an opportunity to push people elsewhere. When you have these moments, like there's a specific reason why now I'm deciding to try and get people, because I have more eyes on me than usual. So if you have these moments, you're doing something where you have more eyes on you, take advantage of that and push them to your email list, push them to your YouTube, push them elsewhere so that you can help diversify more quickly and efficiently rather than like just trying to do it randomly. So if you have these moments, we all do. We all have these moments in life, maybe it's your birthday. Right. So, for example, I know one of the best ways to increase eyes on you, especially in stories or on a post, is to get more comments. So if I'm making my stories, I will deliberately do things to get people to reply to the story. Mm-hmm. Like, and the more people that reply, the more people will see the story, because Instagram is like, wow, people are replying, they're laughing, whatever it is. We're going to show his story to more people. And that's going to get more and more and more engagement. So oftentimes, you know, they have people do polls on Instagram. They'll be like, all right, should I do this or this? I never do the poll, or not never, rarely. I rarely do the poll, because I will say, hey, do you do this or this? And then I'll draw an arrow to the reply box so people will tell me, they'll message me what they do, because Instagram will value direct messages to me from that story far more than people just clicking the poll. So there are simple ways to like sort of manipulate how many more eyes you can get on you by getting people to react and respond to your content, whether it's in stories, on your posts, whatever it is. So getting comments, getting engagement will help with that. And using those opportunities to push them to your free email list, your text list, whatever, is super important.
Yeah. Did I tell you last week I was in my DMs and had a guy be like, this is from, I don't know, 2 months ago, took a picture of Chipotle and wrote yay or nay and pointed an arrow down to reply. And I saw a reply from a guy who was like, I think he said something like, this is so inefficient, or like, this is dumb. Why not just use the poll? It's like, you don't get it, buddy.
Yeah. You and you're contributing to exactly what I wanted you to do.
Well, that I didn't even consider that.
You're replying like, thanks, appreciate it. Yeah. Wait, you posted on your story a couple weeks ago about Chipotle?
Nah, a couple months ago. But
no,
I followed up with at least 100 to 200 of the people who replied.
Wow.
But after like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. But it's cool, like things like that give you if someone just replies to your poll and they just hit the poll, you can't interact with them. Mm-hmm. But if they actually reply in your box, like you have the opportunity, like they'd be like, oh, I love Chipotle. Yeah, me too. I love this. You have a real interaction with them. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh yeah, I don't like Chipotle. Ah, you suck. Haha, just kidding. Have a great day. Whatever it is, right? It's like you have a real interaction with these people as opposed to just like, oh, they click the button, mm-hmm. right? It's a much more personal thing, which is why I would imagine the algorithm favors that. I have a question for you. Someone asked me this yesterday and I figured we could talk about this. And I think a lot of people listening like to hear your takes on finance and stuff as well. So someone asked me in the Q&A yesterday, they said, if you had a significant chunk of change, where would you invest it and why? And my first thought, based on what you've taught me, is an ETF like VU, but I don't know. And that's why I didn't answer that question, because this is not my area of expertise. But if you had a chunk of change, where would you invest it?
Can we make it more specific and give numbers and like tell the story? Because there are so many other important things. Like,
assuming they're not in debt, they don't owe anyone any money.
Okay.
Right? So, I mean, this is in my Q&A box. Like, that was literally all they said. If you had an extra chunk of change, so we'll make up a scenario.
Yes.
If you're in debt, number one, pay off your debt, right? Like, get out of debt first and foremost.
Depends.
Oh, okay. Fuck me then. Never mind.
Well, I'm, for a significant amount unless, of time.
Unless your debt is student loans and it's about to be forgiven.
or any kind of debt that where like the interest rate is extraordinarily low, or even like interest payments are paused for whatever reason. So that's not even like a blanket statement, but yeah, we can't give a good answer unless we have more details. So let's make them up. How much money and what is your current net worth and what is your current income are all really important things to know. So do you want to make up numbers? So let's say this was an inheritance.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking like, I'm not an expert in this, but I'm going to say, let's say someone got $10,000, right?
Okay.
They had an extra $10,000, right? They got a chunk of change. They inherited $10,000.
Okay. They inherited $10,000. That chunk of change, I don't understand what that means. They inherited $10,000.
Sure.
Okay.
Or let's say they've been doing really well with saving and they've got 10,000, let's say they've got like 20,000 in their bank and they've paid all their taxes and all this stuff. And then they figured out, oh shit, I shouldn't just keep all this money in my bank. I need to invest it somewhere. So I'm going to take $10,000 and invest it somewhere. Maybe they inherited it. Maybe they've been saving and just keep it in the bank like I did for many years before. You were like, what are you doing? Like, where do you invest? Where do you put that money?
Okay, so this person has, they have no liabilities and their total assets are $20,000 in cash.
Sure.
Okay, and how much money do they make a year?
Dude, this is I don't know.
Then there's no answer. It's literally like saying, how many calories should I eat? And you don't know their goal and you don't know how much they weigh and you don't know their body composition. And you don't know their activity levels. And you're like, let's just throw out a number of calories. You can't give a good answer.
Okay. Let's say they make 80 a year.
Okay. Pre-tax and then
post-tax.
80 a year post-tax. Okay. And let's say they're spending 50K a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't do anything with the 20K. I'd leave the 20K in cash. And then they have 30K in quote unquote savings coming in per year, which is $2,500 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would do with that $2,500 is you want to have a quote unquote emergency fund. And that emergency fund is cash. You want it to be liquid because you don't want... You need it for an emergency. If the stock market loses 70% of its value and you get fired, you don't want to have to have it in stock, just have it taken a huge hit and then sell your stock. So you want this cash set aside. I would invest first, if you have a 401k and your company is matching any portion of that, that's free money. I would max your 401k contribution, however much your company is going to match. So every single paycheck, you're putting in as much as you can that your company is going to match even a small percentage of. That's the first thing I would do. Then with this extra $20,000, I'd leave it set aside. I'd take the $2,500 coming in each month and some percentage of that, probably most of it, probably like $2,000 of it. And this is all your bills, all your, you know, whether it's your rent or your mortgage payment, your phone, groceries, your internet, your miscellaneous,
car,
everything adds up to 50. You're making post-tax 80. So the $2,500 a month is like legit just saving money. That's after your fund money. That's after everything. Yeah. I would invest it in an ETF and I would pick one or two that are pretty diverse. VOO is a good one. It's a Vanguard ETF. It pretty closely mirrors the S&P 500 index, and it is very low fee. So a lot of these like actively managed ETFs, you invest $100 and then you're paying like 1 or 2% of that per year for the person managing the money. And they're not earning, most of them aren't earning their 1 to 2%. You'd rather have a very low fee like VU, which is 0.04%, which is literally like 1/25th or 1/50th is you're paying in fees, so that much less. I would invest in an ETF like that, but I wouldn't invest it all right now because there is so much fluctuation in markets, not just right now, but over time. You want to do something called dollar cost averaging, which means rather than putting in a whole bunch at once, you put in a little bit every so often. So I would invest $2,000 on the 10th of each month every single month. If you can set it up automatically, great, do it. If you need to make a reminder and do it yourself, do that. But yeah, max out 401k and then pick one of like the main Vanguard ETFs and dollar cost average into there. And don't even look at it and don't even think about it.
Just do that over and over and over again for 50 years.
For your life, yes.
Until when? When do you take it out?
I'm not a retirement planning guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
But one day you're going to take it out because you can't just spend that money while it's in there, right?
Well, that depends on what like your life philosophies are. Bill Perkins wrote a book called Die with Zero, where his goal with his money was to make an absolute shitload and then spend it all and try and time it around his death so that he quote unquote dies with zero, so that he like basically maximizes the utility of all those dollars rather than doing what a lot of people do, which is work, not a lot of people, but a minority of people work till you're 80, you know, make tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and then don't really enjoy much of the fruits of that labor and then die with a lot of money and whatever. That's not his life strategy, but it depends what you're trying to do. I don't know how much you want to end up donating to various causes, to family, to friends, to children, to versus how much you want to spend on yourself, how much you need to spend on yourself. Depends on a lot of things.
So let's say we have a personal trainer, right? We have a personal trainer. Basically, we'll say a personal trainer in like the same situation, about 80 a year post-tax, somewhere 80 to 100 a year post-tax, right?
Okay.
They don't have a 401k.
That's a lot, by the
way.
Yeah,
they're killing it. That's a lot, right?
Okay.
Because I would say, I'm imagining before that point, they probably shouldn't be investing. They should just be saving.
Yes.
Keeping it cash, right?
Yes.
Once you get to between like 80 to 100 a year post-tax and like you've saved a good amount, that's when you can start investing for your future, right? Like,
yeah.
Or could you do it before that?
Maybe even a little before that. The investing depends more on savings than it does on income.
Got it.
So if you have, I don't know what the exact number is either, like, because there's probably some value in investing small amounts of money just to like get a feel for it and the learning associated with it. But definitely getting at least 10K in cash, probably more than that, probably closer to 25,000 before you start actively investing. But yes, keep going with your example.
So you got like 80 to 100K post-tax online personal trainer. They've been doing it for 3, 4, 5, 6 years now, and they don't have a 401k. Mm-hmm. Would you still say like their investment should go to that like VOO ETF?
Yeah, so there's something just came to me. I have an S corp for tax purposes now, so I don't do this. But when I was an LLC, which most of you listen, or this person in this example is, you should be maxing out what's called your SEP contribution.
Your SEP,
self-employed person. And by maxing out, I mean contributing
like
as much as makes
a year, right?
Yeah, probably about that, because it goes up about $1,000 a year ish. And yeah, in that mid 50s range, that is, it's essentially, if I remember right, it's a deduction. So you're investing pre-tax dollars, which is something that's beneficial to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to, it'd be hard to explain why, but, and then you pay taxes when you retire. Some people have, don't like putting money in pre-tax because they have ideologies or beliefs about governments and taxation where they think that this is the best it's going to be. And in 30, 40 years, tax rates are going to be much higher. Most people would say that if you're making good money now, you are in a higher tax bracket than you will be when you need to use that money. So if you're making good money now, you want to get the deduction now, put it in the SEP, and then when you take it out, you're going to have much less income because you're going to be quote unquote in retirement. And then when you pay taxes on that money, you'll be in a lower tax bracket at that point in time.
That makes sense. I hadn't thought about that. Okay.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so if you can't, let's say it's 55 a year that you, for your SEP.
Which is a lot. Most people aren't going to be able to max out their SEP.
But so you put as much as you can into it every year. So
yes.
If you can only put five. But like,
yes,
you want to try and put as much into that every year so that when you retire, you've got as much as possible coming back into your pocket.
Correct. And then
there are penalties for taking it out.
I don't know what exactly those penalties are, but once you're once you have make that SCP contribution, then I have a couple of Vanguard funds. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but VOO is the main one.
Mm, okay, cool.
Yeah,
that's super helpful, man. Like this is the shit that like I'm so lucky to have you, because like I wouldn't know this stuff if it wasn't. And like I think a lot of people are probably in a similar boat where they're like, I have no clue what to do with my money. Like, you know, no idea. And let me
give you some more good ones. Some don't do's. Don't, you know, you come across a windfall, you have some extra cash, you want to invest it. One, diversify, put it in multiple places. Two, don't go with real asymmetric high risk bets. Like for example, your buddy wants to open up a pizza shop and wants 50K and you literally have like 50K. Like don't give your buddy 50K for his pizza shop if that's all you have, yeah. Right? Like if you're a multimillionaire and you believe in him and you want to help out, great, maybe, but don't like, you know, that guy who you went to high school or middle school with who hit you up and has like some great investment asset opportunity and he just needs 12,000 from you and then you go find 10 people that like, don't do that. Don't do that. Hang up on him, all right? If let me give you a good one. If your buddy has this great crypto idea, this great NFT thing, this great like, yeah, maybe put a tiny little bit if you're very okay with losing, don't get wrapped up in that world either. Mm. Yes, you see people make 3x, 5x, 10x, make crazy returns. Sure, have a little fun. Think of that as gambling money. Would you be okay with going and playing blackjack with it? Okay, then you can do that, assuming you're not a gambling addict or have like a problem. But if you can set that aside and be okay with losing it, do that. Good things take time. And if it seems too good to be true, it probably is. And the market over the last, I don't know, since World War II has returned 7% per year on average, something like that. So like if it's going to triple by next Thursday, like don't invest in that. There's something wrong with that. Slow and steady wins the race. Think of the tortoise and the hare. Like just keep chugging along, keep working hard, keep focusing on what you can control, dollar cost average into these diversified ETFs that have low fees, 401k contribution, max your SCP. Yeah. And pay attention to stuff. Like one good way to save money is for people who are personal trainers, like have a separate business credit card, put all of your business expenses on there. You know, the mentorship's obviously a write-off. So depending on your tax zone, like if I was still in New York City and my effective tax rate with the extra 7.5% self-employed have to pay, plus New York State, you know, city is another 4%. Like I was paying north of 50% in taxes for many years there. So the mentorship would actually be half off if I were to have signed up because it's a deduction.
Mm.
And so make sure you're tracking all of your business expenses and not overpaying taxes, because that's another good way to save money in the long run.
Mm. Yeah, I think one of the best things you taught me all of this, but one of the best ones that just helped a lot was the dollar cost average. Every month, just put in X amount every single month. It goes there. And it's part of my like, I always tried to save as much as I could, but as you know, like the majority of my money was just like all of it was in my bank account, just sitting there. And you're like, yeah, you gotta put that somewhere. Like that's not doing anything. But you know, it's funny. Like, so for someone who didn't study this stuff or doesn't understand it, to hear people say like, yeah, have your money work for you. Like that sounds like another language. Like, what do you mean have my money work? Like how is that possible that my money could like help make me more money? You're like, you know, the whole like the rich get richer type thing, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. like they have more money to invest. Like I didn't understand how that worked and I still don't, but I understand enough now to where it's like, it's important to have enough liquid if you need it, when you need it, but mm-hmm. also like once you've got that comfort there and you've got that buffer, cool. Make sure that you start investing elsewhere so that you're set financially and you and your family are taken care of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's important. I mean, if for people who don't understand the let your money work for you, go play with an investment calculator. Type in investment retirement calculator on Google, pick the first one and play with the numbers. Age 25, Average rate of return, 7%. Retirement age, 60, 65, wherever you want to put it.
I'm going to do this right now. All right. So what do I type into Google? Investment rate of return calculator?
That'll get you there.
And rate of return calculator.
Retirement calculator.
Okay. Investment calculator, smartasset.com, starting amount. Okay. So starting amount, what should we say? 5,000?
Sure.
All right. 5,000 additional contribution annually. We'll do monthly. Additional contribution monthly. So we'll add
2,500. That's what we had in that example.
2,500 a month. You add 2,500 a month. So starting out at 5,000, you add 2,500 a month with a rate of return of 7% over how many years?
Probably 35 years. Well, here'll be interesting. Do 25 years and then do 35 years and look at how big the difference is.
Okay. So starting amount 5,000, additional contribution is 2,500 a month with a rate of return of 7% in 25 years, that will be $2 million, $2,053,806.
About 2 million bucks. Great.
That's crazy.
Now do 35 years.
In 35 years, that'll be $3,095,010. That'll be $3 million. That's crazy. So it's a $1 million difference for those 10 years. That's crazy, 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 crazy. Yeah, doing one of these things is really was like, holy shit. And it's literally only 2,500 a month.
Yep.
On top of your initial 5,000. Now, let's say you've got an initial of 50,000 in your bank. Let's say you've got 50,000 in your bank and you contribute 5,000 a month, right? And this is why, like, you know, maybe not buying that ridiculous car and having a crazy car payment, or like having a car that guzzles gas, or like buying like an apartment or a house that's outside of your range. Like this is the perfect example of why I like to rent right now and pay relatively low monthly rent. So I have more to put into my investments than necessarily like putting a huge amount on a down payment or something. But like, so 50,000 starting amount, additional 5,000 contribution monthly with a 7% rate of return for 35 years. Or 30 years, sorry. 30 is maximum value is 30 years. That's $6.5 million. That's crazy.
Yep. And that's why I preach saving so hard, especially getting your nest egg, getting early on. Like, you don't have to live frugal forever, but, you know, that's why I was walking to Costco in Harlem and walking home with those cardboard boxes of groceries. Because the cab was $11 or $13, and it's like every dollar mattered then. But then obviously over time, the more you save, the less each marginal dollar matters, and the more you can enjoy a more comfortable lifestyle. Because when you have the nest egg a little earlier on, it's going to build into something much bigger 30, 40 years down the line than if you don't compile that money early on.
Makes total sense. Man, this turned into a real good pod.
It did. Went from fantasy football to Andy some Tate. Real stuff. Andy Tate is the mentorship.
Oh, Andrew Tate. Yeah. Well, this was awesome. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please leave a 5-star review on iTunes. 5 stars Fiver. Minimum, please.
Yes,
and,
please.
Yeah, and that's it. We appreciate you. We hope you have an amazing rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye.